So good morning, everybody, or good day or hello and whatever day you're joining us. It's just a good reminder for us today, Sunday, it is September 13th. And for some of us, we've been making our way through school and understanding just some of the changes that are taking place among us through that time. And probably without a doubt, over these last 6 months or almost 7 months now, we've been challenged with different things, among them parenting. And so last week we had Brett Ullman with us to talk about mental health. And today, as promised, he's back to talk to us about parenting. And a lot of it is contained in his new book that I'll let him share with you about. But we're thankful for Brett. Again, we've benefited from his ministry over the course of many years, and just thankful for the opportunity to make a way to have this happen here today. So Brett, I'm just gonna turn it over to you, and maybe with one more reminder that this coming Wednesday on September 16th at 7 o'clock, we're gonna have a question and answer period live on our Facebook page. That's Facebook, and you can check us out at SEMC or at Sarnia EMC, 7 p.m. on Wednesday the 16th. Question and answers with Brett. All right, Brett, thanks for joining us.
Well, glad to be here. I'm just going to take 1 second so I can share my slides. And there we go. It's good to be back. It's interesting saying that always over Zoom and other technologies, but it's good to be back. I was supposed to be with you guys in September anyways for a Saturday night and a Sunday morning. This was supposed to be the Saturday night, and the mental health from last week was the Sunday morning. But during the COVID season, there's been three things that I keep hearing about from parents and leaders of things that have been exacerbated due to COVID. The first is mental health, and we worked through that conversation last week. And as you just heard, we're doing a Q&A coming up, so make sure you keep the questions for that. The second one is parenting. Just suddenly parents have been home with kids, and kids have not been out to school or events and youth and these other things. They've been home, and I'm hearing lots of conversations on that. And the third's actually pornography, maybe another conversation for another day. But I want to walk through a talk today called Parenting Navigating Everything. And it's an interesting talk for a Sunday morning. It's one of those, how do we connect our ancient faith with our modern world conversations? Now, what I want to do quickly is just kind of go again, if you weren't here last week, just to say, my name's Brett. I come from Ajax. Ajax is about 45 minutes east of the city of Toronto. I am a speaker. This is my full-time job. This is an interesting season because as a speaker, I'm now doing more digital. And then I think a week or two after I'm with you, I'm actually doing some in person with digital. It's a whole new kind of world for all of us. But I speak on only about 7 topics, kind of looking at some of those tougher things, sexuality, pornography, mental health, dating, media, men, parenting. I'm an author. I have a number of books, and I'll go through those at the end. I'm a blogger. You might call it a vlogger. I do a lot of video blogging. I'm also a mental health advocate, as you kind of heard from the conversation last week. And this is my family. My wife, Dawn, my daughter, Zoe, is now at Western University for her first year. And my son, Ben, is starting grade 12. So 2 kids heading into the chaos. It's going to be an interesting fall, just as we look at how things go. And we just kind of pray for our kids and our teachers in this season. So Navigating Everything is a weird title. I get it. And the original title wasn't Navigating Everything. The original title was Everything. And it was a little too much to put in one talk. But it all came from one conversation. I was at a talk, I was speaking on mental health, and after the talk, like normal, people come up and chat. And a father said to me, "Hey Brett, how do I talk to my daughter about sex?" It's a great question. And I went to answer, but before I could answer, he said, "Oh wait, by the way, she hates me." And I kind of said, "What?" And he said, "Well, forget about that. How do I talk to her about sex?" And I'm like, no, what? Forget about sex. What do you mean she hates you? Because that's everything. And I said to him, "Sir, like, if you don't have a relationship with your daughter, you will not be speaking truth into her life about those tough topics." And then I realized that as a speaker, I've been speaking for 2.5+ decades on topical conversations, but I've never helped parents actually have the relationship they need to actually talk about those things. And so I began to research this talk, Navigating Everything. Now, a few kind of ground rules as we get in, and if you see me look down, I'm running a laptop beside me as well. But please be a good learner today. You know, we're good listeners, but we're not always good learners. Each week when you have a talk, you should be able to take something from, whether it's a Sunday morning or a Wednesday or anything, take something from that and implement it into your life. You can take notes, you can take photos if you want, find your light bulbs, which sounds weird, but every one of you is different in the audience. Some of you have young kids, some of you have teenagers, some of you are empty nesters, some of you don't have kids. And I would say to anyone who doesn't have kids, you are spiritual parents. You know, we are the body of Christ, and what affects one of us affects all of us. And we're actually seeing new statistics showing grandparents raising children is about 1% of all children in Canada. Another conversation for another day. Find your light bulbs. Have opinions just means I would rather you have a different opinion than me than have no opinion at all. I think it's important that iron sharpens iron, but we need to have good, well thought out, kind of biblically based opinions on things and look at kind of how we get better at them. And it just says YouTube, which just means there's some things that are big conversations today. And I'm going to go through them really quickly, but if it says YouTube on it, it means I have a YouTube video where you can go and find, you know, a YouTube content that I've done on that topic. And there's no magic pill this morning. And I say this morning, it could be in the afternoon or whenever you actually watch this. But I think prevention is the key for things. And this isn't just for young children. You know, there's prevention in conversations before we sent our kids back to school. There's prevention before my daughter headed off to university. There's prevention. But many of us are in the maintenance and management mode. And some of you are in crisis, and crisis is all hands on deck. Us as pastors and leaders and teachers and friends and family and counselors, like it is, we surround you and we support you. We become, right, that family to you. And if that's what you need, that's an important thing. But this talk itself is not kind of a crisis conversation. Now, the world our kids are growing up in today is changing. And these things on top were actually things my kids dealt with and the ages. You know, technology, the iPhone came out when my daughter was in grade one. One of my daughter's friend's parents got divorced in grade one. Tough conversations in grade one. In grade two, my daughter's friend's older sister struggled with self-harm. These are big things for little kids to deal with. How do they process that? My son saw his first pornographic image in grade three, and I'm the person who teaches you how to not have that happen. But it's not if, but it's when you see these things. Music in grade four, dating began for my daughter's friends in grade five, social media, drugs were found in the schools in grade six. And then you look on the bottom of that page and it says bullying, anxiety. Like I struggle with mental health. You heard my story last week. How does a grade two deal with that? Eating disorders in grade three, depression in grade four. I dealt with suicide in grade five, sexting in grade six. And then we hit middle school. Peer pressure, self-esteem, alcohol use, phone addiction and peer attachment. Then we hit high school, alcohol and drug abuse. Now, Leonard Sachs talks about the depressed girl and the adrift boy. They're overgeneralizations, but I would agree. Busyness, the desperation for peer acceptance, and extreme stress. And I would say some of these things are new to us, but are your kids ready? Are you ready? Are we as parents actually involved in equipping and empowering our kids for these conversations? And I would say, are we equipping and empowering each other as well? Because we live in the same world. I really love this quote. I love this bowling alley image with the bumpers on both sides. Remember when you have little kids and the ball kind of goes bump, bump, bump all the way down? I really loved that. The problem what we see today is this. It says that every parent must protect a child's innocence as long as it's necessary. But what it's saying here, then it says every parent must be ready to let the innocence melt away at the appropriate times so that purity can take over and rule the soul. It's this switch from innocence to purity, meaning the goal is not innocence for a lifetime. The goal is actually purity. And all the conversations for mental health, sexuality, dating, pornography, all those things are things we need to start helping our kids walk through, giving our kids more, let's call it, more weight of personal moral responsibility, being in the world and not of it. So here's the things we as parents and as leaders need to help teach our kids. But what I realized was that I didn't kind of talk about the foundations of parenting. So I began to read, and I'm an avid reader. I probably read 150 books a year, maybe a bit more. I love to read. But this is what I began doing, reading books on parenting. And I came up with, and I don't want to say the four foundations of parenting. There's not like I have a book on the four pillars. These are just things that I found were missing conversations on how we as parents, and especially in our world right here, as faith-based parents, how we help ourselves get influence and how we create authority in our homes and all these other things. And so what is parenting? Might sound really basic, but if you don't know what you're doing, how do you actually do it? Time, communication, and discipline. And that bar on the bottom, Christian faith, and I say over again so many times, true Christian faith should touch all aspects of our lives. Our worldview shapes our values in turn shape our actions. So we're going to get right into this. We're going to go through this very quickly. And I will say that if there's things that you want to go more in depth with, I do have a new book and I'll show it to you. Well, I'll show it to you now briefly, but at the end, I'll show it to you. And the first six chapters of this book are what I'm going through today. Even though I'm doing four pillars, I've actually expanded it a bit more in the book. But what is parenting? They did a massive study and they polled around 10,000 parents asking, what is the goal of parenting? 46% said the goal in parenting is to have children in a family. Let that one sink in just for 1 second. Half of people believe the moment you have a child, you're done. Then people want to be a good parent. They want to adopt. And I begin thinking, I don't know if you understand the question. 1% want to raise kids to become good people, but 12% were irrelevant answers. I want to have a kid so I can teach him how to play basketball, soccer, football, hockey. I want to have a kid so I can stop drinking. These were like statistically significant amounts of people. Now, here's the problem. Not everyone realizes the task is hard because there's no clear goal in the parenting process. If you had a baby, do you remember getting given the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting? It seems to be this thing we just give to young parents. Then you have a kid and you come home and there's nothing. It's just this kind of, here's maybe a book or here's something else. So I pulled and just kind of started thinking, well, what is the goal in parenting? And one parent wrote me, the goal in Christian parenting is to raise godly children. I would say, of course, I agree with that. Now, we also do see sometimes that we have kids who are Christians who are nightmares. So there's some conversations here. It's not just a Christian kid is a perfect kid that we are parenting. The second one comes from the book Trophy Child. And I love this. Our job as parents is to raise children who love Jesus and leave home as responsible adults. I mean, we could stop right there. But then he goes on, we prepare them for a lifetime of following Christ, working hard, being married and raising a family. I love that. Third one, most parents said to raise happy kids. And I would say, I disagree. What does that mean? Like happy is an emotion. Does it mean you did a good job or a bad job because of being happy? And I just don't think it's a great thing that we kind of look at. My favorite though, is what was said in this book by Ted Cunningham. He's a pastor in the US. He says this, they will not be with me forever, so I will prepare them accordingly. I dropped my daughter off at Western University, which is between you and me. And so like I drove out your way, dropped her off a couple weeks ago. And I hope she's ready. I think she is. And we've worked hard, but the goal is to prepare our kids so that they're ready for things in life. Now, as Christians, we look at, well, what does the Bible say in parenting? George Barna, who does statistics for a living, says, if you've sought spiritual guidance in parenting, you might have been surprised to discover how little instruction God gives us in this regard. Now, language really matters. This doesn't say the Bible can't tell us anything about parenting, but it says there's nothing about the word parenting because the word parenting is a new word. The word parenting was an invention, kind of like the word teenager in the mid-1950s. So what does the Bible tell us? It tells us who we're to be as people. And if you become who the Bible calls you to be, I think you will be a good parent. Now, there are verses on children and kind of that kind of idea. Deuteronomy, teach them to your children. We've heard that verse before, but the actual language is the word inscribe, like carving with a knife. Proverbs 22, train up a child in the way he should go. You've all heard this one before, but here's the problem. We take a proverb and we turn it into a promise. And proverbs are actually wisdom. They are adages. And what we have today sometimes is this, there is a parent in our church whose kid goes off a bit and then we look at them and go, well, I guess you didn't raise your child in the way you should have, like it says in Proverbs. But not every good parent has good kids. Not every bad parent has bad kids. There are horrible parents sometimes who have these fantastic kids and you're just like, I think for the most part, if you train up a child in the way you should go, it will go the right way, but it's not always perfect. Colossians and Exodus, do what parents tell you, honor your father and mother. I don't disagree with those things, but we miss the context of relationship and everything else. And Proverbs 13:24, we'll deal with that one in a few minutes when we deal with discipline. So it's good to understand the stages of parenting. So on the top are, if you've ever taken a psychology class in college or university, Galinsky's parenting styles or stages. My favorite aren't those. My favorite are below. And this came from, you might have known, you know the name Andy Stanley. This is from his wife, Sandra Stanley, in a blog. The discipline years are 0 to 6. The training years are 7 to 12. The teen years are 13 to 17. And I think the teen years should be called the coaching years. And the young adult years should be called the friendship years. Now, don't get hung up on words here. You discipline, train, coach, and are a friend throughout each of these things as well. Now, parenting stages kind of moves us into what we call parenting styles. And today, if you search for parenting, social media will give you parenting styles. I have a YouTube video on this. I think when I made the YouTube video, I had about 55. I'm up to 190 something plus in going. You can see where it gets confusing. Now, before I give you a few, Tim Elmore and all these people that I'm giving you today are great resources for you as parents and leaders. He says from this decade, which was the 90s, adults began to believe that our world was less safe than ever and our kids needed oversight or direction at all times. And it caused four things. Kids began feeling that they were special, needed special perks because we said they're special. Kids began to feel unsafe, afraid, and even paranoid because of their parents' behavior. Kids began believing that they were fragile and could not handle adversity. And kids began embracing the narrative that their world is full of evil people who could harm them. I wonder if you would agree with me. This is kind of where we sit today. When I finished speaking this, when I was back in pre-COVID conversations, this was kind of what I heard from parents on an ongoing basis. So the way we've done parenting styles has created problems today. In this slide, and I have a few of them, I'm only going to do a couple in each page. The top left is one of the more important, attachment parenting. If you read a book by Leonard Sachs called The Collapse of Parenting, he talks about how our kids need to have our home base and they attach to us before they go and attach to their friends, which is what we call peer attachment. And even conscious parenting, it's this idea of our kids feeling like safe and secure and soothed and in, like it's that base, that home base that our Christian homes kind of create for our kids to go out to. Christian spiritual parenting again, and there's many other ones here that you can kind of search and look online later. Which one will I do here? Overparenting, top left. Probably one of the biggest detriments that's changed in parenting over the last few decades is that. That's the quote that Tim Elmore said, that like, and the four reasons. This is our, we're kind of reaping what we've sowed with parenting. And the lists go on. The few in the bottom I just added in last week. Switchboard parenting, where, remember the old switchboards with phones? Everything has to go through a parent. The Velcro parenting. Universities and colleges say kids are like this with their parents. It's like Velcro trying to get them off. Humpty Dumpty parenting is kind of funny. Your kids will fall off the wall and break and be forever broken. Anyone confused? Like, what are we supposed to do with this? Now, here's the truth. There's only four parenting styles. And they're on kind of this axis. This is support and warmth, and this is control and demand, like asking things of our kids and loving and warmth for our kids. And I'm not going to go through them all, but the top right, authoritative parenting is what we're called to be. We love our kids to death, and then we support them. Like, and we ask things from them as well. Like, my wife's a nurse, and if I was heading out to a speaking event, I would ask my kids to walk the dog and do the dishes, but I also love them. And it's that mix of warmth and asking, which is what our kids kind of have the best bet of moving forward properly. Now, to be in an authoritative parenting place, you need to have authority in your home, which the father, remember that beginning conversation? How do I talk to my daughter about sex? He didn't really have. Now, I'd encourage you not to overparent. Yeah, I always find it interesting in life. I grew up in the church and when I heard parenting talks, we talked often about one aspect of parenting. We talked about spiritual parenting. How do we help our kids love Jesus? Which is such an important thing. But we didn't, in my church growing up, talk about how do we actually parent. And it's kind of like navigating everything with parenting. There are components of how do we disciple in our homes, like family discipleship, and then how do we connect with media and other things. But these parenting styles create the foundation for all of it. Overparenting means we're doing too much for our kids. Tim Elmore says, overfunctioning in parenting simply means doing too much, intervening and removing common struggles they may experience in their day. And when we overfunction, our kids underfunction. And if you've seen the news and watched culture today, we have a lot of underfunctioning kids. Now, every book I'm giving you, I have a book of my favorite parenting books, and they're listed on YouTube. And this is another one, Julie Lithcott-Hames. Now, if you want one quote for our time together, this might be it. Why did parenting change from preparing our kids for life to protecting them from life? See the switch there? We used to be preparing them for life. Now we protect them from life, which means they're not quite, she uses a term under-constructed. It's an interesting word. She calls them not quite fully formed humans. To any young adult listening, I apologize, but that's kind of just what she says. And it's not all of you, it's some of you. Now, I'm just going to give you very quickly some ideas of if you're like, I wonder if I'm over-parenting. If you, before COVID, drove to your kid's grade 2 class to cut their food into pieces at lunch, you're probably over-parenting. True story. If you drive to your kid's school and walk them to the door of their classroom. If you go on a job interview with your child, statistics say 1 in 7. We're not helping our kids. True story, in one of the books, Collapse of Parenting, father in Chicago calls his daughter at UCLA to wake her up and tell her what she has to do for the day. You always make your kids lunch. You call your kids' teachers to argue marks or to get them in the right classroom. If your kids weren't with their friends a week ago, here's what, when we call and say, well, Johnny needs to be with his buddy. What you're telling your kid is that without your buddy, you can't survive. And our kids began to get nervous then if they're not with certain people. Over-parenting is fear-based parenting. And this is not creating, right, that place for our kids to move kind of properly into life. There are ages that kids can and should do things for themselves. What we're seeing today, though, is this interesting rhythm in our homes today. Now, this a bit of this goes to my talk on media. We are giving our kids over-sexualized, over-violence, like very, like even the news. Don't put the news on with your children in the home. It's not like here's the good things that happened today. It's everything bad that happened today. Kids can't process that. Kids can't process death. They don't understand those things. But when they're young, we give them these things. And so part of that is kind of how do we create a biblical worldview with our media, and our worldview then shapes our values and our actions, and how do we help kids have that? But then when our kids get older, we seem to pull them back. It used to be that every kid gets their license when they're 16, and today's statistics are plummeting with kids who get their licenses. And always you hear from, when I talk to the kids says, well, I drive a van and I live in a busy city. And it's like, we all drive big cars and we all live in busy cities, but it's our fears that become our kids' fears. When your kids are 18, they should be able to do things. And if you always do these things, they won't be able to do them. When my daughter headed to Western, just like many of your kids and other people's kids headed to college or universities or apprenticeships or a gap year back at school, or they're doing a Cape and Ray in British Columbia or going overseas, they need to be ready for life. How to deal with, you know, dating relationships, interpersonal relationships, faith, how they can grow in their faith in Jesus without you there, right? This is the idea that it's their faith and they can pick that up and move forward with it. So there's four categories. We're going through these really quickly. The goal kind of this morning is kind of this, I want to be a catalyst to push you forward to think more. So this is the summary of the first section. Authoritative parenting. Love a lot and ask a lot. Don't overparent. And if you're a parent, tell your kids to tell you when you're overparenting. It's always amusing when your kids tell you, like, Mom, you're overparenting me. Do life with your kids, not for your kids. And I didn't talk about coaching, but this is the analogy of a coach. Like if I coached rep baseball for many years and my kids went and played the game, I wasn't on the field. And this is how it is with your kids. Your kids will go out tonight to functions or different things, depending on how COVID's going, and they'll be with friends and they need to know how to deal with things on their own. And the list of books, and I'll tell you a few of these, like Ted Cunningham is a pastor, so there's a faith-based thing to it. Now, the truth is, I think Gordon Neufeld and Julie, I do know Karen's a Christian, but they're mainstream books. You won't find faith in them. And free-range kids might sound weird. Think of like free-range chickens, but that's kind of the idea. There was a grade 6 kid in Winnipeg, and their neighbor called Children's Protective Services or Children's Aid, whatever we call it, because he drove his bike home from school. In grade 6. And we wonder again why there's fear with kids. I rode my bike to school in grade two. By the way, it hasn't changed since me being in grade two and I'm 49 now. There's not more abductions and all these things, but there's so much more fear. Now, I think the greatest gift we can give our kids is time. Now, I actually believe it, we could argue it might be failure. And one talk, a woman kind of corrected me and said, no, the greatest gift is Jesus. And yes, of course, the greatest gift we can give our kid is Jesus. I mean, hands down, I fully agree. But we are talking about parenting right now. So kind of like Jesus. And now we're talking about how we parent and what we give to our kids. Now, this marbles analogy is a really important one. Oh, here's what it means. In this cereal, glass jar, it's not a glass jar, are 936 marbles. The day you have a kid, you put 936 marbles in. Every week, every Sunday night, you took one out. When this emptied, you'd have a kid who's 18. And if you had a middle school kid, you have this many marbles. And for me, my daughter's in university, I don't have any, and I have 52 marbles left for my son. The idea with this is, if you go one thing down here, it's the idea of how many occasions and birthdays and summers and things you have left and what you do with your time. The older my kids get, the more important the reality of how important, building into them their faith is. And each week, you know, it's interesting being at home because we do a church service and then we kind of ask questions back and forth and then we pray together. And how important are those things before? Like for me, my daughter heads off and she's gone to university and she'll be home. But the truth is she's not with me week to week. All of these things. Now, one of them says tucking into bed. If you're tucking your 18-year-old into bed, you might be an overparent. Now, all those parenting stages, just realize that after that comes another stage. And I call this the marbles analogy with a twist. It's just the idea that when you run out of marbles, start putting marbles back in when your kids are 18. Every time you love on them, support them, take them out for dinner, like it's the friendship stage, but you're still their parents. And every time you encourage them, and then in time, you know, they get married and you have a son or daughter-in-law and then they have grandkids. Every time you build into their life, put another marble in the jar. Now, time matters. Mornings, drive time, meal time, like eat together as families, and bedtime matters, I would say, except for teens. Again, if you're tucking in your teenager, again, you might be an overparent. And just family outings, it just talks about how they should be preserved. It just means don't always have your kids' friends with you. And this is just an interesting one about celebrating. It's not always celebrating. You celebrate transitions, graduations, different things. Even in our churches, we often have, like when a kid goes from grade 8 to grade 9, we pray for them or we celebrate them. But in your families, do this. And also pits, fill them. I mean, it might just mean going out for ice cream or dinner, but it's the idea that big days are big deals and we need to support our children. Now, again, we're going through this quickly, but the marbles analogy, there's actually an app I'm going to give you at the very end that does the marbles for you on your phone. Mealtime, and can I encourage you, eat dinners together as much as humanly possible. And it's not just eating, it's the preparing and the cooking and the shopping and the cleaning and all of those other things. That is what is a huge thing right now, right? We're at home and we have time to do this. So do it. Scheduling, I think, is a really important conversation when your kids get older. And milestones, you know, when there's something that happens, if there is a death, if something happens, if someone, you know, if we went for a grad dinner with my daughter, you know, kind of after she graduated grade 12. And it's kind of bittersweet because you're a senior, you kind of knew you lost stuff, but we still went and celebrated. And a couple of books here, Grown Up's Guide to Teenage Humans, Chip Heath, Power of Moments. And the last one is an interesting one just for us as parents called Fair Play. It's talking about domestic rebalance, which is a conversation I'm researching a lot for my talk on men. But it's the idea of it needs to be a little more fair in the home because we are seeing today women still do the majority of all things in the home, whether you work or don't. And we need to look at helping our kids be part of the conversation on we're a family and how are we going to divide up kind of the labor in the household. Communication, and don't settle for bad communication. It is really important. I say this again, I said at the beginning, if you don't have a relationship with your child, you really don't have the influence to speak truth into their life. So if we want to have influence with their faith, with conversations on pornography, really tough topics, you need to have a good relationship with them and good communication. Gary Chapman talks about three things, you know, maybe saying, I'm sorry. Now I struggle, as you know, with mental health. And some days after a bad sleep, I might kind of say things a little abrasively to my kids or wife and have to say, I'm sorry. But if that doesn't, you know, fix things, it might mean spending more time or having better communication. And the truth is with that, you know, every one of you gets along different with your kids. You know, I did more sports with my kids, and my daughter and I enjoy, right now she's teaching me about like cold brew from Starbucks. Like, but we all have things that we celebrate together, and my daughter and I have a TV show we watch together. And if you need counseling, that's okay. It's okay if your relationship is struggling. It's okay to say, I want reconciliation. I mean, talk about reconciliation. We're talking about in culture right now, but even in our own homes, just with, if there's some issues, we can work through them and make sure that we're listening. I was at a church a couple of years ago, and I spoke on a Sunday morning, and I finished, and a 15-year-old girl from the worship team came down and burst out crying. She said, you know, I'm really struggling with mental health. I feel like I'm going to have panic attacks all the time. I told my dad, he did nothing. And as we're chatting, the lead pastor came up. And as you know, if I was at your church, you know, we'd probably go out for a meal with the pastors or different things after the service. And the pastor came up and said, oh, I see you've met my daughter. And I took a breath, and I've known him for a number of years. And so we sat down, and I was able to kind of bridge this conversation. But I think sometimes we don't listen as parents. And if your kid says, I'm struggling, if your spouse says you're struggling, if a friend says they're struggling, like, we need to listen. Way back in the 90s, everyone remember the 90s? There was a band called REM. They had a song called Shiny Happy People. I think sometimes we want to be that in the church. It's this idea like, well, we know Jesus, we have everything, everything's good. And it's like, well, we love Jesus, but we still struggle in our relationships and our marriages. Our kids still might have some struggles. We might have health struggles. Like, it's not we love Jesus and everything's fine. It's we love Jesus and he's with us in these journeys. Kind of, we talked about mental health last week. But if your kid says they're struggling, we need to actually walk through these things. And never forget, communication, what you say matters. I was at a church out your way somewhere, I forget. But I spoke on pornography, and I was driving back home, and I was having lunch in a Subway restaurant, and kid wrote me and said, hey, kid, he's 18. He wrote me and said, hey, if I ever struggle with pornography, can I talk to you? And I'm like, sure, but why wouldn't you talk to your dad? And he said, well, we got out of the service today. His dad's one of the associate pastors. And the dad got in the car with the three teenagers, and the first words out of his mouth were, what kind of stupid person gets addicted to pornography? And the kid said, my dad told me in that moment that he's not a safe person to talk to about anything ever again. Talk about like your influence. Like, as a secondary thing, like, where is the grace and the mercy in our church world when people struggle with addictions and other things? I grew up at a church where if a young girl got pregnant in high school, she had to come apologize to the congregation like it was an offense to us, as opposed to supporting her in that tough time. But we need to listen to our kids. We need to listen to how we speak about other things around us. And your kids need to know you love them in their way. If you've never read the five love languages in your marriages, you should, but there's a version for children and teenagers. All it says is really simply, there's different ways that we experience and need to be loved. For me, words of affirmation mean nothing. Just, it's a word, like a card. I don't care. I'd always say for me, well, prove it, you know, acts of service or, you know, quality time. But my wife and I are different. And so it's important to know what your kids are with this. And family meetings, I'm just going to say, if I could encourage you to begin in two places today, one would be to have a yearly family meeting, and two would be to eat dinners together. You want to create a foundation for your home from which to build everything from. It's these things. This is where, you know, we have our family dinner every August. And so we just had ours. And even though my kids are like 18 and 16, turning 17, but we talk about, we're going to be a Christian family. What does that mean? And how's it going to look? Do you need a new Bible? Do you want a new book? Like, we talk about our faith. We talk about vacations. We talk about how the year is going to go right now. But it's the idea that we're a family and we together will get through this year, but we're going to plan it out. Main thoughts, listening, driving, simple. This one was just, as parents, if you're driving in a car, people are more likely to talk, love languages and family meetings. And I have a list of books. Again, these books are all listed for you online. And these are just the ones I've gone through each of these sections, just to kind of give you some kind of places to kind of go off from. And the last one, and probably the quickest one, is just about discipline. And here's the foundation of what I'm going to say about discipline. Discipline is to switch from punishment to teaching. It's about teaching, not telling, right? We need to switch what discipline is. Ron Morish, who travels the education, kind of speaking circuit in Ontario, says, discipline is about teaching children to behave properly, not punishing them for behaving badly. And so I would say with discipline, you need to have a good relationship for discipline. You need to have clear, agreed on expectations and consequences. And we need to switch the word punishment for training. If we're just punishing kids, are we teaching them, like if they're coming home late from a curfew, which is 10 and they arrive home at 10:30, are we teaching them how to set an alarm on their watch or their phones? Or do we just take a phone away for a week and then just kind of give it back to them? So side note, parents with teenagers, I would encourage you not to just take away phones. Phones are kind of a lifeblood to communication and everything for our kids. Now, this one slide is probably one of the most important ones, I think, of all the ones in this conversation. So it says positional influence, and it goes down. I know there's a lot here. Just look at the two big kind of gray and orange balls. When you have a baby, you have positional influence. You pick up your baby and you leave if you want to. That wanes to nothing. What we want is relational influence, which begins at nothing and grows. You see that little bar, it says freedom there, like as it goes up, like you want, when I say to my kids, hey, do you have a few minutes to chat? I want them to go, sure, because there's been years of conversations on couches and cars and dinners. And that's what we want, is that kind of relational influence. And one thing with discipline, realize that some parents fail to realize that it's the job of every child to tear down their parents' fences and build their own. We actually want this. Your kid needs to love Jesus because they love Jesus. And I say kid, and if there's students listening, you know, like I'm just saying from a parent's perspective, our children, we want you to love Jesus because you love Jesus, not because we love Jesus. I want my kids to go to bed in good time because they realize it's important to be healthy and rested. I want my kids to do well in school because it gives them choices, not because I love them only if they do well. You see how there's so many conversations we need to have here. Ron goes on to say, you have to decide what you're all about. Are you here to give children the punishment and consequences they deserve for failure, or the training and support they need for success? Now, the number one asked question on discipline is about spanking. Now, I have, I think it's an 18-minute video. It's been seen about 8,000 times, I think, on YouTube. But here's my 30 seconds. I think that there are good parents who spank. I think there are good parents who don't. That's the blue. I would be in the don't category. But I think there's a discussion all around that. I think that if there are parents who spank, it can go to abuse. And I think there's parents who don't spank who become neglect, where you don't actually discipline at all. Now, what we do is we use the verse in Proverbs. So I'll make sure I get the right one. Proverbs 13:24, he who spares the rod hates his son. Here's what's interesting when you start digging into this, though. I didn't find any scholars, any biblical, my friends who teach systematic theology at Bible colleges and multiple denominations, no one said this is about spanking. Sometimes it's funny what it becomes like social Christianity, what we've always thought it was. So it talks about the rod, and in the Bible, there's two kind of ways the rod is talked about. It's a rod. I always say a rod, which sounds more like a baseball player, but a rod, physical rod, and the rod, which is more like a construct. A rod would be like when the Egyptians beat someone from the people of Israel to death, right? Bad. A rod. This verse actually says it's more of the concept of the rod. It's the rod of discipline. If you don't discipline your kids, you hate your son. And that changes the construct. But I think we need to think through this. If the Bible doesn't really say it, and if statistics show us that spanking might help in the moment, but it doesn't help really overall, there are other strategies that we can use to implement. And maybe we should look at natural consequences or timeouts and all these other kinds of things that we can have. In the book, I go through this in a long, probably 20-page conversation. And really quickly, the moment I say this, people kind of take sides. And I would just say that we need to think through things. We want the best for our kids. So if you were going to spank, I'd say, or not spank, we all should do this. Spend time with our kids, have a good relationship with them, create a warm and loving home with unconditional love, meaning your kids know you love them, not just because they're following rules and getting good marks and, you know, that we love them. Set clear and concise boundaries, and then the discipline if something's going to be broken. Do life with, not for your kids, and then discipline the behavior. Don't break the child. And the one thing about spanking, this quote just says, I'm just going to paraphrase, it says the kids get spanked at 8 at night, not 8 at the morning. They get spanked at night when a parent is tired and exasperated after a day of work, which actually shows that this might be more about us sometimes than it is about our kids. Again, just interesting conversation to have. So discipline is about teaching. There's a quote, I think it was Zig Ziglar, which is my favorite name, but Zig Ziglar once said, all good discipline has a purpose to it. And anytime I've ever been disciplining my kids, it's what is the purpose in it? You know, if my son or my daughter make a mistake, it's not just, you made a mistake, I'm going to yell at you. It's how can I teach you so that this won't happen again? And right, and there's been times that maybe the response coming back is a little harsh and you're kind of like, I'm going to let you say that back to me a second time, right? This is like giving a second chance. Having influence, picket fence boundaries. Picket fence boundaries, by the way, are where rules are a bit flexible, meaning if you're, once my son's curfew was 10 o'clock and he came home at 10:10, but he had walked someone home. And that's kind of like, well, that's okay. Like there's a flexibility to it. It's not just like, here's the curfew. And then punishment versus teaching. And there's some really great books here. And again, these are listed online. Allison Schaefer, if you don't know Allison, I would subscribe to her on Facebook. She's from Toronto area, somewhere around there. Parent on Purpose by Amy Carney is fantastic. Henry Cloud and John Townsend, probably one of the better books as well. And there's faith with many of these people intermixed throughout it. Again, what's hard is for us as Christians is trying to connect our ancient faith with our modern world and how we do life as every day when we're home, you know, during COVID season, when we're at work, when we're doing things, how do we actually create that influence from a biblical worldview as well, right? And then help our kids and all these things. So this to me is kind of where I leave you off in this conversation. Now in my book, I actually go into the categories because from this influence, you know, you're parenting the parenting styles and you're going to be a bunch of those. There's ones you want to get rid of, ones you want to be more, and then you're spending time with your kids and then you're having better communication and then you're disciplining it, but you're teaching from that. We now got to talk about, as we did last week, mental health. We're going to have to look at how our kids can get a biblical worldview of healthy sexuality. These are tough topics. We're going to have to look at dating and what it means. We're going to have to look at media. How do we, you know, how do we, again, engage the culture and what do we listen to? What do we watch? But all those things come from that influence and then from that biblical worldview we've created. My website, as I said last week, is just my name. It's just brettallman.com. And if you click on blog, it actually opens up to a whole bunch of, did I get rid of it? Oh, I did. If you click on blog, it opens up and you'll see everything from parenting and sexuality, dating, pornography, media. And then I also have a thing which is like best books, best websites and podcasts. And on that, you'll find like all kinds of great resources. On the top is all my social media. And you also, sorry, here's all the books. Like I do these videos just like best books on mental health, Brett's picks on pornography and different things. But at the top of my website, all my social media is there. And if you're looking for great resources, I don't often say I'm a blogger. I say I'm a curator. And so I find the best things that I can find and then I push them back out to you. At the beginning, somewhere near the beginning, I talked about, oh, it's one of the marbles. I talked about the app. The first one there, parentq.org, is a website, but it's also an app and you can put your kids' birthdays in there. This is faith-based, but very good scientific research as well. It's Kirsten Ivey, Reggie Joyner from Fuller, and some of the best content you can ever find. Growing Leaders is Tim Elmore, who we've talked about today. Now, CPYU probably is my favorite. That stands for the Center for Parent and Youth Understanding. These are websites that keep you updated as a parent on culture and all aspects of culture. Something's going to be faith, so something's going to be the music, other things are going to be trends, but it's good to know these things. And so if you sign up for the weekly email from CPYU, and I would say do it from all of these, once a week you get an email, you just peruse through it as an adult and go, oh, I didn't know that. Like just, it's good to know kind of terminologies and different things. Plugged In, Focus on the Family, and Axis, actually, I always kind of think it's funny. They have a thing called Teen Culture Translator. They'll do three things and they translate from teen speak to adult speak. It's funny, but I really love it because we as adults need to understand the culture our kids are in. Now, we've blasted through this in about 40 minutes right now, but the truth is we could have gone for an hour and a half and then some. And each of these categories are other talks. There's four ways I want to decrease the overwhelmingness. And I think overwhelmingness is a word. I'm going to use it either way. The first is my YouTube channel. Now, I've taken a bit of the summer off right now. It's been a kind of crazy season, but I'm back in September doing these weekly, and I'm actually debating on doing two a week, just YouTube videos. And what it comes from is people just like you who come up after a talk or send me a message after and say, what about this? And then I go, that's a great question. And I spend some time putting together what I hope is a kind of an articulate, researched, thought through biblical response to that. And then I post them online. And so online, I have about 100 YouTube videos already up and running, all categorized. The blog on my website, again, categorized. Like if you're here today and you're like, parenting is what you want, click on that. But you might be like, I'm really struggling with, you know, pornography or dating or some of these conversations. You can find that. Now, I do have a new book. I'm going to come back to that in one sec. But I also encourage you, some churches have like parent groups, but I love the idea of like small groups or book clubs where parents kind of walk through together just books about and its best practices and other things. So my new book just came out, it came out a month ago, and it's called Parenting Navigating Everything. Now, this is not a normal book. It should have been probably five or six books. Everyone wanted six books because you could sell six books. I wanted one. And so it's 16 chapters. It's 226,000 words, but it's a choose your own adventure book, meaning you don't just need to go through all of it. You can either do the six chapters on parenting, the first six, or you can do the 10 chapters on the larger topics. And if you look, family discipleship, all right, that's the first one after the foundations of parenting. And then we have mental health, engaging the culture, media, sexuality, pornography, dating, finances and education, substance abuse, and loneliness. Loneliness might sound like a weird one, but it was in everything I researched. Loneliness was something that kept coming up. And I find it's huge in our church world amongst men my age. And it's growing by leaps and bounds, not only with men 40 through 60, but teenagers. And so we are the most connected generation ever. We're on our phones. We have people all around the world connected, but we are not connecting. And COVID has done, you know, I said last week the idea of like we were told to, you know, social distance as opposed to physically distance. And many of us have not been like, I love people sitting in a park talking, sitting in a, you know, in a garage or in a backyard now. Like we need to be even in a patio talking to each other. And you can get this book anywhere you want as well. And two slides and then we're done. The question always people ask after this is, well, where do you always start? And I actually love that question because there's so much to it. Now, a number of months ago, just before COVID kind of hit, I had a chance to see the band For King and Country. They were in Toronto. It was actually the night Toronto shut down. And they have a song called Burn the Ships. And the line says, burn the ships and don't look back. If you don't know the analogy, settlers, when they came over, burned their wooden ships to the ground so they couldn't return and they had to stay. And so burn the ships and look back. I love that one word though, and don't look back. So no matter where you sit today, as a parent, as a leader, as a grandparent, don't look at what we didn't do. We've all messed up in parenting. The question is, what do you do to move forward? And I would say, I kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, there's two things that I would say I would start with. I would start with family meetings. A family meeting is just a moment where you say, hey, we are a Christian family. And this is what our lives are going to look like. And we're going to talk about everything, you know, in the next year we're going to do. It gives you a blueprint to move forward. And then family dinners. Eat together. I heard a family that doesn't, a father once said it was teenagers. He said, well, we never eat together except for like occasions. They just put out food and everyone grabs it and goes and watches TV in different rooms. And I'm like, you're losing so much when you aren't there. There's the conversations, that home base kind of start in those family meals. John Maxwell says, though, when you get challenged by anyone ever, choose one thing. And so choose whatever I talked about today, and even thinking about last week with mental health, choose something, right? And then make it a habit. I've been reading lots of books on habits, right? Do something, create habits in our lives. And this goes to our faith with Bible reading. It goes to, you know, chatting with our children and health and everything else. But do these things and make them become habits. And I clicked my button and came off. One sec. So as we kind of end here, I would just say this. I encourage you to support each other in your church, right? In your homes, in your workplaces, like have good conversations on these things here. I would say kind of in closing, our parenting, kind of like our faith, is built in moments. And I hope today has been one of those moments that's helped you walk a little bit forward more in your faith, or giving you some conversations that you know you now need to have in your homes or with your family or other people. Now, I want to leave you with a quote we kind of said at the very beginning, which was that one from Ted Cunningham, where he says, they will not be with me forever, so I will prepare them accordingly. And so my challenge as I kind of leave this to you would be then go and prepare them accordingly.